over at it. They can't walk around, they just look over at it. And they say, well, how do you like that car versus the Pro? Well, it was an instant success. It got a rave review. So that got approved as the Thunderbird.
Oh.
You know, which may have been a strategic mistake, because then the company says, what do we do now? You know, we've got this car, the Thunderbird's going to come out a year sooner.
Mm-hmm.
And as it wound up, you know, eventually they shared common doors and common eight pillars, and with this aircraft type door, you know, a lot of the design is very similar.
Yeah.
So that may have hurt us somewhat.
Uh-huh.
Because people that have been driving a Thunderbird a year, suddenly when the mark comes out, they say, well, that's just a glorified Thunderbird.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Without realizing, of course, the real beauty, you know, they say beauty is more than skin deep. Yeah. Well, in the mark, that's the way it is.
Yeah.
If you get in and drive the mark, you realize the suspension, and it's a Mercedes. I mean, it's
right.
For half the price.
Of course.
You know, the guy that pays extra money for the mark is going to know it once he drives it.
Mm-hmm.
He may walk in the showroom and say, well, you know, a lot of people think that one rounded off front end is like another one. You know, they don't see the difference. But the other thing that I appreciated in that mark studio was that we made history with the flush headlight.
Yes.
That took a change in federal law. And I think it was PEC in then. National Highway,
right.
Or EPA, what was it, National Highway, he was a guy
safety.
That, safety, yeah, he had to approve that headlight.
Mm-hmm.
And that decision kept getting delayed and delayed, and I knew, from a design point of view, if we had lost that aero headlight,
mm-hmm.
it would have looked like a Thunderbird.
Right, exactly.
I mean, we all really were worried about it. So we were really counting on getting, we had the vertical front end on it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the mark front end, but we had to get that headlight.
Mm-hmm.
And the day PEC went out of office, they signed that legislation. And up until that point, we had a dual program going. We could either plug in the quads,
mm-hmm.
or we could plug in the aero headlight.
Mm-hmm.
And we had them both ready to go, both engineered, both designed, you know, it was like a dual program out there. But it worked out, so boy, we got the aero headlamp. I found the product letter that approved that, because I knew that would set the new trend in the industry.
Uh-huh.
You know, boy, from here on, everybody's going to do it.
Right.
Because, see, that took a change in law. So I've gotten thousands of product letters that I've read and filed and eventually discarded.
Mm-hmm.
That one I'm keeping. I'm going to frame it.
Oh, you should.
I pulled that product letter out that says that they approved the new aero headlight due to the new FMVS change.
You know, I have a copy of that.
Yeah, I'll find that for you.
I'd love that, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a fascinating story. Back to the, a bit closer to the beginning of the aero, how did it come about? Can you sketch in for us the
aerodynamics?
The aerodynamics look. The initial impetus and then the final decision come about?
Well, I think the aero look was really pioneered by Mr. Telnak.
Mm-hmm.
He has a good public way of talking it up.
Mm-hmm.
And he was out there really pitching the aero look.
Uh-huh.
As the new future wave, you know, the new look. And
he'd been to England, had he not?
Yeah, he'd come back from Europe, right.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And I think, though, you know, they were still pretty square looking over there.
They were, yes.
You know, and he came back, started preaching this.
Mm-hmm.
Bordenay, before he left, I have to give him the credit too.
Mm-hmm.
Bordenay had planned for a wind tunnel to
yes.
be built on site.
Right.
And I guess you heard about, you know, we got the pilings in the ground.
I remember, I could hear them being piled every day.
Yeah, and we still got the cracks in the wall down in the basement and the leaks.
Yeah, I'll bet. Yeah.
So those pilings are in the ground for that wind tunnel. So he had the vision that's the way of the future.
Mm-hmm.
I guess probably a key factor that got us in there was the fuel economy.
Yes.
It just seemed like such a, to me, the aero just seemed like such a small number to me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you look out there with, you get a low number like 0.35 or 39, and that might save you a tenth of a gallon of gas.
Talking about the coefficient of drag.
Yeah, the coefficient of drag.
Yes.
And the Japs are out there beating us by 10, 15 miles per gallon, you know. So I'm telling myself, well, there's got to be something more than arrow. But then the second thing it took on is that they're damn nice looking cars. I mean, they're really just good looking, beautiful cars. It seemed like the way, then the old Alex Tremulous area, you know, when he was always preaching aerodynamics and land speed records, there's just something natural that makes a designer want to design a moving object that has smooth rounded off edges. So maybe we grabbed at that straw, that tenth of a mile per gallon, to I don't know, this is my theory, just to justify doing these shapes. And then I think we found out that they are real dividends to be paid. It is fuel efficient. And there's less, I mean, there's a lot of other things. There's less wind noise, there's better handling. I mean, just all kinds of things that the aerodynamics, that we get from aerodynamics, other than just plain fuel economy. But
Pretty much it was Jack Telnak who pioneered.
Well, in my opinion, I give Jack a lot of credit. Yeah. He really picked the ball up on that one. And he still feels very strongly on that one.
The products of the next decade certainly look like you're going that way.
Yeah. Well, see, there's a lot of small wars that have to be won. You say, like flush glass.
Yes.
You know, engineering
fascinating
needs a offset. Used to be like, you know, from 3/4 to a 1/2 inch offset.
Right.
Well, if you want aerodynamics, you want flush glass. You want the side glass flush and the backlight flush and the windshield flush. Well, those are just major engineering breakthroughs to get that. You know, to design the moldings that lay flat, the very thin moldings that are flat, so that you can get the smooth flow over. So that all goes along with it. So I'm not sure how much that helps you as far as your drag, but it certainly makes a beautiful car.
Yeah.
You know, one of the classics out there is the Audi 5000.
Yes.
On that.
But
and our new Taurus lineup is strictly, you know, it's going to look a lot like the Audi.
I've seen some of the spy photographs.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
Have you been involved with that?
Oh yeah, in interior. Back in interior.
You're back in interior. Yeah, we'll get that. We'll get that moment.
Yeah.
I want to ask you more. I want to make sure I understood you correctly. That you had the what is now the Mark 7 concept car, pretty much in hand, and you're waiting for approval. And if I understand you correctly, and the Thunderbird people come along, and they, and what was the glitch? They had a problem.
The approved theme,
and the probe was not going over.
It didn't survey well.
Didn't survey well at all, and people were saying, "What is that ugly thing there?"
Yeah, they didn't survey well, so they, in the middle of the survey,
over the weekend,
they pulled our car out and put it in the survey, and then by the end of the survey, they said, that one surveyed very well, and that's the one we're going to approve.
Well, this is very interesting to me, because in my naivete, I thought it was just the opposite. I thought that the impetus came from the Thunderbird.
It should have been that way, because it was a year earlier.
Right.
It would come out in 83, and we didn't come out in 84.
That's fascinating.
But it just... Then, of course, we had to do some fast shuffling, because my studio, which was the luxury...
Right.
Suddenly had to do a Thunderbird.
Yes.
You know, since our car got sold, we had to get in there and make the Thunderbird, then turn around and do a Mark off of it.
Oh boy.
And then hope that there was enough difference. Well, of course, engineering came to our rescue. All the features and functional innovations came to our rescue to really make that thing, you know, a step above the T-Bird.
Was it a Granada platform? Was that involved in all?
No, it's just a Fox platform.
The original Fox platform, yeah.
Yeah, it's still a Fox platform, but you can't. You know, you get in that car, it's...
No, it's quite...
With the handling characteristics and everything, with that airbag suspension and everything, it's...
Incredible.
No, it's...
It really is a magnificent creation.
Yeah. I hope that'll be a classic someday. You know, that it's got mixed reviews out there. They're the old-timers who... I shouldn't be saying, I'm getting there. But the guy who's driving the Marks, you know, the square one, the box.
Still want the old...
A lot of room, you know, he can
Rolls Royce
flop around inside of it.
And yes, right.
He drives into the showroom now, and he looks at this really sleek, small-looking car, and he's got this great, big, pretentious...
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, big cigar puffing guy, and he owns his own car dealership or whatever, and he buys the car primarily because it is, I don't even know if he cares what it looks like. It's the Mark 6 or whatever it is.
Right.
And that's the status. That's the flagship of the company.
Yeah.
But when he sees this thing, he gets incensed. He says, wait a minute. He says, that's nothing but a glorified Thunderbird. Walks out. Mm-hmm. But what he doesn't realize is that we have kept the Talon car.
Right.
You know, we didn't drop that. We still have the Panther Talon car. We've introduced another flagship called the Continental.
Yeah.
It's sitting right there.
Beautiful.
But he still doesn't accept those. He thinks those are something less than the Mark.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we haven't downgraded the Mark, but we have put it in a market that's a little off the target that we used to be on.
Mm-hmm.
We're now suddenly finding that the young, rising, affluent, you know, doctors and lawyers, the California set, are unloading their Mercedes and their BMWs, and they're buying it.
Right.
But the dealer's getting upset because he takes this car back to his old customers and they don't like it. So then they come to us and say, what are we going to do? The car's not selling. So we really have a marketing strategy problem. It can be sorted out, in my opinion. The strategy's got to be changed.
Yeah.
We've got to let this market know out there, this young, affluent market, know that we have a car for them now.
Right.
A status car. It's got the European flavor and feel and handling. It's half the price of the Mercedes.
Uh-huh.
And I think word gets out, they're going to snap that car up.
I think so
too. I don't know. And then the other guy who's driving last year's, we have a version for him that's got more wood grain on. We're adding more glitter. We're adding the loose pillow looks to the seats. And we're going to make him, give him a little more of the familiar surroundings.
So this will be the 85.
Yeah, so he doesn't feel like he's quite so left out there. Whether he buys or not, I don't know yet.
Now, obviously, you've been involved in this.
We're having
new interiors.
Yeah, I'm in the interior. Primarily, it's the interior that gets to him. Well, I mean, when I say interior, you're talking more than just what they look at when they're. You're looking at what they're in.
Yeah.
You know, they get out of this box.
Yeah.
It's like going from a square room or a trailer that's square into an Airstream or something. You know, it's got a rounded. And the helmet home, it comes in on them, and it's got a console that's over here. The guy feels a little bit cramped.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he won't even give it the time of day. He won't try it. I'm sure he would like it if he'd got it.
You should. Well, it occurred to me that this is a classic case of where a marketing strategy has gone a bit awry.
Yeah.
And that
I don't know. I think we knew.
At least to slightly askew.
Yeah. It could be. It's perceived differently. I think we knew exactly where we were going from a designer.
Right.
And I think the planners aimed at that market.
Mm-hmm. And they've hit it.
They've hit it. That thing went as straight to where they aimed it as any car that ever. But I don't think they expected quite this reaction from the guy who's out there driving today's Mark. They thought maybe he would, you know, step right into this thing.
But we
really wanted to pick up this new affluent group.
Of course.
You know, so we wanted
to keep your old one, too.
Well, yeah, because those are the ones who are buying the Mercedes and BMW, and that's the image cars we've been putting up there.
Sure.
So, you know, we got them on the walls, and when a new 480 came out, we'd put it up there and look at it, and look at the cues that they were going, and air and arrow, and all the same things.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It's interesting.
There must have been a hurry up meetings in which you were involved, I suspect, in terms of what are we going to do to get this.
Yeah, we were scrambling around to get the Mark sorted out.
And so the 85 Mark really seems to be your from the interior. Seems to be the one you're going to really.
Yeah, 85. No, 85 is not that big of a change, you know, only being 1 year later.
Yeah. I mean, the interior.
Yeah, interior though, even in interior, we can't really change things like seat contours. We can change, we change the fabrics.
Yeah.
We give the guy a little more bright on the in the panel. You know, the European
wood grain.
Yeah, a little more wood. The European look, you know, is more. Is you play down the wood, you play down the bright.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so very we have an LSC model out there that's doing quite well.
Yeah.
That's the European version. But the one we're concentrating on right now in 85 and 86 is the other one, primarily. The LSC is going to, this is that expanding market.
Right.
So it may expand and wipe the other one out, I don't even know.
Mm-hmm.
Or we may win the other guy back in again.
Mm-hmm.
you know, the bottom line is, these people were turning off out there with this.
Yes.
With this, we were selling many of those marks anyway.
Oh yes, I know.
I mean, we were down to just a few thousand of those a year, so we were, even if they'd never bought another one, we weren't losing that much. But if we can just reap this whole new crop out there, you know, I'm talking like a marketing guy, which
which you have to be.
Yeah.
Well, so in terms of styling changes, what are you planning for the 86 then?
86 mark, we're moving on into 87 before we change anything significantly.
Are you,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Change.
Yeah. We've got a model coming out called the ComTech model. It's an complete electronic control interior. I don't know if you've heard of this. It's an 85 model. There's a CRT tube down there that replaces your climate control and your radio over here.
What is a CRT tube?
It's a cathode ray tube, and it's got about 60 or 70 functions built into it.
Mm.
Now you can, well, for example, you can, with your push buttons down there, you can call up your climate control.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get these degrees. You can, if you want it hotter, you push, I mean warmer, you push, you touch the screen with your finger. You touch the screen and the changes at 72 degrees, 73, it goes right on up.
Mm-hmm.
If you can change your fan speed, you could call up your fan speed, fast, medium, you know, infinite. You could touch the part of the screen and your fan will go up. Then you can erase it, make it all go away. Then you can call up your personalized calendar. It tells you all your appointments for the day. You can erase that. You can raise the volume of your radio up and down. You could just do just everything with that thing.
Marvelous.
Then in addition to that, it has a pod control that's just behind the steering wheel that you come in from behind it with your fingers, with these buttons. You can turn on your windshield wipers, your headlights, your parking lights. You can turn your radio up and down. You can turn your radio on or off. All right there at your fingertips.
Mm.
Now, this is an extremely high-tech. This is for the guy that's really sophisticated. I mean, he's out beyond the LSC guy by 10 miles.
Uh-huh.
And he's going to pay about $5,000 to get this car,
extra.
Yeah. And I can't imagine, he's like the guy who's the computer buff, you know. He's
right.
Going to want this.
Exactly.
He wants it just for show his friends or whatever.
Yeah.
But it does all these things for you, too.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that has gotten good reviews in surveys. Uh-huh. People have liked that. They like these pod controls. So that's a case of where we put out a limited number of cars in advanced concept. We're selling.
Mm-hmm.
And it's put out through some kind of special vehicle office. And we're going to pick up that pod control for 87 and incorporate it
right.
in there. Not the CRT yet, because the CRT has probably got a long way to go. It's very expensive.
Futuristic.
Yeah, it's very expensive to get in there. But the pod control is one of the elements that caught on.
Right.
So when the guy that gets in his 87 is going to, you know, he'll have better seats and he's going to have a little bit more high-tech instrument panel with these controls. So
mm-hmm.
we think we're going to give him some pluses out there too.
Sounds fantastic.
Yeah,
so the evolution of the interior has come pretty much along with into a sort of a cockpit kind of situation where
yeah.
you're surrounded by instruments in the end. It's
right, electronics.
Electronics.
And electronics, that's the name of it.
Yeah.
And more sophisticated climate control and radios are just blowing my mind lately.
Really?
I don't even understand all these things that my kid has at home, you know, all these
right.
hi-fi equipment.
Sure. Right.
And but I better understand it because now they want to put it in cars, you know,
mm-hmm.
graphic equalizers and
yeah.
all these controls and it's all LCD readouts and
mm-hmm.
megahertz and but on the other hand, a designer has got to you can't let go. You can become so technical.
Yeah.
You can forget the man on the street.
Yeah.
So in a way I don't particularly want to learn all that stuff.
No.
I figure if I have trouble figuring it out, I won't forget the guy who's going to be buying that thing. Especially this old guy who's going to trade it. You know, I mean, you get him, so he'll really get incensed.
Yeah.
So we've got to bring that back,
mm-hmm.
give him the quality sound, but somehow simplify the thing to where you can at least control it. He understands what knobs to turn and what
mm-hmm.
buttons to push.
Yeah.
That kind of thing.
You see, a voice actuated the situation?
Well, the voice, we played around with that, okay. And yeah, that's something very intriguing, but from my opinion, what is the ideal voice? Mm. You know, you ever hear some people, if you use a woman's voice, people say it's a nagging woman. Mm-hmm. If you hear a man's voice, they say, why isn't a woman, why isn't a nice, sexy woman's voice? Mm-hmm. If you use a computer voice in there, they say, you know, yeah. It's inhuman.
Yeah, right.
And the other problem that we ran into, we put it in, and then taking it back out again.
Ah. Mm-hmm.
Things like you tell your door was ajar.
Right.
And it just keeps telling you over and over, and you know damn well your door's open, and you want it open, but it just keeps telling you anyway. So you want to unplug the wire? So they decided that wasn't such a good idea. But now they are working on these. I've seen some demonstrations where you can tell your radio to turn on, or you could tell your wipers to turn on.
Yeah.
Now that I like. You're the voice.
Sure.
That's what you meant, isn't it?
Yes, that's what I mean.
No. Right. Yeah, the other way was the voice telling you something's wrong, but...
Either way.
But the idea of you telling the car to do something, now right. That is an intriguing concept.
I think so, too.
You know.
Yeah. And that really is what you should be aiming for. It's the old... The ergonomics taken to the nth degree. That,
yeah.
It's the person involved, the driver, yeah. That you are.
Yeah. That's right.
Well, how do you see, generally, then, styling is... obviously going lower and more flush and more arrow. Is it going all the way to a probe a vehicle, do you think, in the next 10, 15 years?
Well, when I walk into the advanced studio, their assignment seems to be from year to year to outdo themselves, you know.
Yeah.
They went, I don't know what the probe was, 0.30 or something, and then they go down to 2.9 and then 2.3 and then down to 1.9 and pretty soon they'll vaporize. I mean, nothing left, no drag at all. You know, I would rather, from my point of view, not get in locked into that kind of object. Just out there, just to see which to achieve some low number.
Right.
I think the human body is going to be a limiting factor after all. You know, there's a reach a point to where you start to get uncomfortable in these cars. You got to remember that the guy needs to, you know, be in some sort of a natural.
Pretty soon you're laying down.
Yeah, you're gonna. As long as they don't forget that, I'm all for arrow. Uh-huh. You know, I'm all for arrow as long as it doesn't begin to cramp the guy who's in the car.
Again, ergonomic.
And inhibit his.
You're going to get a rising swell of protest.
No, I hope not. Right?
I mean, in terms of. Switching to another model.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it sounds like you've had a fascinating career.
Well, it's been very enjoyable.
And there's much more to come.
Yeah.
You're obviously.
I can stick around a few more years, yeah.
I hope so. Yeah. And you enjoyed it?
Oh, yes. Definitely enjoyed it. I've seen a lot of good, colorful characters come and go and work for them. That little list I gave you are all of my assignments, and I just hadn't got around to it yet. I wanted to go back through that list again and put all the people I work for at each one of those assignments. And I talked to Art Morrill the other day, and I said, I'd like to know everyone who's ever worked at the design center.
Yes.
There's got to be a list somewhere.
Uh-huh.
It only goes back to 1953.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I feel like I know most of them. But many, you can't remember that many names.
We've got a little time, if I could throw some names at you.
Okay.
You came in 55. Is your time okay?
Yeah, I got a few more.
Okay. Did you worked with, of course, Gene Bordenay quite closely.
Yep, Gene was the general manager then.
You said something about him, but your overall view was very favorable.
Mm-hmm. Gene had come from General Motors.
Mm-hmm.
And I think McGuire had come from General Motors,
yes,
too.
Right, yeah.
They were, you know, young men then.
Right, and
35 or something. He's about like the youngest, one of the youngest VPs or...
Right.
At the time?
Mm-hmm. I think so, yeah.
George Walker.
About Frank Hershey?
Frank Hershey, I didn't know Frank. Somehow we missed, he either left right before I came or just after I came.
Yeah.
You know, didn't he go out to West Coast?
I think so.
Kaiser?
Yes, I think so.
Aluminum, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Never came back.
Bill Schmidt.
Yeah, well, left. How about Bill Schmidt?
Bill Schmidt.
Everybody says good things about Bill.
Yeah. The day I hired in, Bill Schmidt quit. They introduced me to him, and he says, hello, goodbye.
Oh, no.
But then I've, you know, I'd heard, I followed, eventually wound up with Bill Schmidt Associates, you know, the industrial design office.
Yes, uh-huh. Have you kept in touch with him?
No, no.
Yeah.
We never really got to be acquaintances, other than that one time we met.
Did you have much, Elwood Engel,
Oh, yeah, Elwood.
Did you work with him at certain point?
I don't think I ever worked for Elwood.
Mm-hmm.
Elwood was, he's more, you know, he and Joe were this consulting group. And,
yes, coming in from George Walker, yeah.
Yeah, and Elwood would, he'd always have some kind of a special studio out there. They would do concepts of cars, and then they would compete. You know, I told you about,
we'd
always compete. And many times Elwood cars would win, you know, because I'm not sure, I mean, they were good-looking cars. For example, I think the 61 Continental.
Yes.
61, wasn't it Continental?
He's very proud of that.
Lincoln.
Yeah,
60, Lincoln 60. Started out as a Thunderbird, and they changed it to a, you know, I've forgotten who walked in, I think it was McNamara, walked in and saw that car, it was a Thunderbird. He says, well, make it into a Lincoln.
Right.
And that's a classic, in my opinion.
I think one that's of his prize achievements.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Yeah. We've spoken about John Najjar, who you worked with from time to time.
Now, John Najjar was another one. I think next to Joe, he had about the most energy anybody ever run into. He was just a little pocket of dynamite. But Johnny would always get involved in all the technical. He loved presentations. Boy, he would put on a presentation that would bar none. And in fact, the few times I worked for him, we'd put together some of these shows, and he'd have charts and graphs, and it would be, you know, really professionally done.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd engineer and coordinate the whole thing, and I think he'd love to get out there in front of top management and sell his concept based on these, you know, this presentation we would all put together. But I always thought a lot of John.
Someone has spoken about rendering. Who were the good renderers, do you remember?
Some of the good renderers, a guy named Sherbert, Jim Sherbert, who's now with Toyota.
Uh-huh.
He was a great renderer. Herb Grass was always good. I guess there's a lot of people who are good renderers. Just slips my mind right now.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But they were a lot of good.
Alex, the terminus you've talked about as being a marvelous eccentric and a visionary of sorts. And didn't quite fit in with the establishment, but had a great vision that many others did not have.
That's right.
It is too bad that he had to leave so soon. The
I think his heart was really with Ford.
I think so too.
He really, loved the Ford. He would call it the Ford Motor Car Company.
Yeah, right.
And,
the old name.
Yeah, he. I think he really would rather have stayed with us.
I think so, too, yeah.
But he went into cars.
Some of the later ones whom you've obviously worked with over the years, Don Kopka, have you had much contact with Don?
Don Kopka's a real gentleman. I worked for him, several years. He really has a good business head on him. He's probably my ideal as far as an administrator, next to Bourdonnais. Mm-hmm. I always thought Bourdonnais was a real good administrative type. But
really, even some of them.
And Kopka, he's got to be, equally as good as far as he can handle himself and he'll cut through all the superfluous and get to the issue. And
that's good.
Yeah, he's good. I really think a lot of time.
Gail Halderman, have you worked with him over the years?
Yep, worked for Gail.
Always a good man.
Yep.
Everyone speaks well of him.
Yeah. And I worked for Gail, back when he was a comer, he was.
Uh-huh.
Now he was a good renderer. You're talking about a renderer. Gale was good.
Was he? Uh-huh.
And he was really a ball of fire. He was a good designer. And you set your targets on these certain people, and I sort of targeted him. At one point in my career, I targeted in on him because I really wanted to be, the kind of a designer that he was.
Yeah.
And he's good. He's done quite well. I think he's well thought of in the company and well thought of, through the planning, and that's not always true of designers. Sometimes there's this adversary role.
Yeah.
that the designers have with the planners or with the marketing people. But both Kopka and Haldeman seem to click with them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they seem to understand and talk their language. And, I mean, while they, you know, they have the differences, but they seem to handle themselves professionally. And,
mm-hmm.
and then, you know, then you have the types that just don't give the time of day. You know, they're the designer, they're right, you're wrong, you know.
But Homer Lagasse, did you work with
Homer? Yeah, Homer. Homer worked for me when he retired and then went over to Society of Creative Studies.
Uh-huh.
And now he's another good renderer.
Is he?
I think the reason I couldn't think of names is because all the names came at me at once. I mean, there are just so many of these guys.
Yeah.
They're all fantastic artists.
Uh-huh.
I mean, there are just so many artists. I'm afraid what's going to happen is when I get out of there, I will not have collected enough artwork.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I see beautiful pieces of art. It may be a rendering of a seat or something.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, Homer does artwork anyway. He does drawings of ships and locomotives and beautiful airplanes and renderings. And Homer, he talks about the best design. He is in his ideal location right now as a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he says all the right things.
Study.
Yeah, he says all the right things. He inspires people. He really gets these kids cranked up.
Mm-hmm.
From a design point of view, I felt that Homer was a little bit out of sync.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and when I say he was, you know, bad design, he was a little out of sync with what was happening
mm-hmm.
at Ford.
Uh-huh.
But he gets out of those kids. Those kids are right on.
Uh-huh.
And Homer is smart enough, you know, I get you graduate. Somewhere along the line, when I've been off the board long enough, I've been off the board a long time, you don't get to do any designing of your own, but you got to know when you see it, you got to know which way to lead and guide the kids so that they are going to. I think Homer's got an affinity for that. And he was always a colorful character, man. You could always get good stories out of him about his fighter pilot days when he's in the Navy.
Yeah. Well, they've all been a tremendous influence over the years.
Oh, yeah.
The history of Ford Stein. And I'm glad that Mr. Lagasse is working with young designers, which is really key to the future.
Yeah, I get over to see Homer at least once a year, you know, to go see the students work. I just over there a few weeks ago. And I really should get over there more. I think that school he's got over there is going to be every bit as good as Art Center.
The Center for Creative Studies.
It may already be, I don't know. It's just come up so strong.
Where is that located again?
It's over off of Kirby, you know, John R. and Kirby.
It's the old Art Center?
It's just behind the Detroit Institute of Arts. It's back in there.
Okay.